This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Do you guys believe in manifestation?
He does this thing where he does like a silent pause, expecting the audience to respond back.
Do you want to answer my question? Hello.
No. Yeah, I believe in it. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I do too. And here's why. So as you guys know, I made a 25 things to do before I turned 25 list to satisfy in 2023, the year. And at number three, bullet point number three, I had something very specific, but something that had to be done. I don't care where, when, how, why. It was, I had to see Black Coffee live in concert. Roddy, are you familiar with Black Coffee?
No, I'm not.
Black Coffee is a South African house music DJ, electronic music DJ. He has been one of the most prolific international DJs of all of time. I've been the biggest fan of him for a very long time, but a new reignited spark has been created in the last few months. And I really want to see him, but it's hard to catch him because he travels the world. He goes from goddamn Ibiza to Turkey to Bangkok. You got to catch him somewhere, right?
Right.
So the other day, 3 days ago, 2 days ago, I was scrolling just Instagram, going through stories. And guess what I see, Radia? Guess. I see Black Coffee show announcement. Not in Tampa. Not in West Palm Beach. This man is coming to my city. He's coming formally to treat me right before Ramadan.
Right.
March 17th.
He's gonna give you a private showing.
If you guys like, and for that one reason, I'm now a hipster. I now believe in manifestation.
Oh, wow. You have to be a hipster to believe in that, huh?
It took Black Coffee for Washington to believe in me.
That's all it took.
It's crazy, though. It's like, out of anywhere in the world, he could have gone to goddamn Calgary, Canada. I'll go ahead and start naming a billion cities. Why is he coming to my city? For me. He knew. I spoke my message to the heavens. And he was there. He was like,
thank you for starting off the podcast with this beautiful story. You know, I'm sure
this is what I'm gonna leave the listeners off with. If you manifest,
wow,
it will come true.
Wow,
profound.
That was a good one. That was a good one.
That's probably our best intro. I'm not gonna
right. Anyways, welcome back to our podcast. Difficultish, a podcast about different South Asian narratives. I am Mahua.
And I am Nightcap Coffee Mashnu.
So we got someone special for this one. You know, we got a very big Difficultish enthusiast. We got someone that I've been looking up to for many years, and then we finally met up last year. We got the famous, infamous. Actually, infamous isn't like a negative thing, right?
No, you're doing her an injustice. We have one of the coolest people in New York City on the podcast.
Yeah, actually. You know,
we have one go ahead.
He met them once. Anyway, so we have Radia, right? We have Radia. You might know them as Knives Meow on Instagram and social media. Wow. You might know them as a cat enthusiast. You might know them as a Bangladeshi American illustrator with the fun hair. She is also someone that I go to for literally everything, like anything related to taxes, anything related to like building something contractor wise, anything related to like, I don't even know, like somehow she knows everything. So we are really excited to have Radia on our podcast because Mashun met her for the first time the other day, and like, she has so much knowledge, and we're just really excited to learn from them and just, you know, teach you guys as well, but also just learn about their journey and, you know, artist endeavors and everything.
Radia, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself much better yourself?
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me on the podcast, because if you didn't know, I'm the number one listener on the Difficult Dish podcast. This is not up for debate. First of all, my name is Radia Rahman. I'm a first-generation queer Bangladeshi-American illustrator, born and raised in the humble borough of Queens here in New York City.
We love Queens.
I met Mohua, was it last year? We met in 2022, right?
Last year.
And ever since then, Mohua has been a ray of sunshine in my life. Aww. I feel like there's been a lot of disconnect within, like, my trust in the South Asian community, and I feel like you've helped me, like, meet so many other people. You know, I've been binging your podcast. I caught up.
Yeah, she's not lying about that. She literally started from zero, like, in December of 2022, and now she's already caught up.
And if, like Moa said, I am her personal business manager, non-official business manager. But that's kind of why I really love South Asian people helping other South Asian people. So, as I said, I am an illustrator, but I also went to art school, and I feel like maybe talking about a bit of the work that I do and kind of, I don't want to say the story of how I got here, but kind of giving you the TLDR of being someone who is South Asian, being someone who is queer, you know, born and raised in the Western world, and how that has influenced, you know, my career path, just like me as a person, me as a human being. And also the fact that going to art school is very different than what most South Asian people, you know, the trajectory of many of our lives. So I graduated from the School of Visual Arts in 2020 with my bachelor's fine art degree in illustration. And of course, I had to graduate in the worst possible year for humanity in the 21st century. But the pandemic. I am grateful to say that I was able to pick up full-time freelance illustration pretty quickly. So I'm mainly a digital artist. I used to do a lot of traditional work, and I still do in various mediums. But when it comes to illustrating, most things I execute it digitally. Just to give you an idea of my work, it's very fun, playful, a lot of pinks and blues. I want to make people feel happy and, like, filled with joy when they look at my work.
It's very playful.
It used to not be.
But you also use your art for such, like, meaningful and, you know, good causes.
I kind of, you know, Mohua also does very similar things. Like, if you've heard Mohua talk on this podcast, like, both of us kind of have the same vein of work. Despite our art styles looking very different, I also have incorporated, like, South Asian elements into my work, which I will get into a little bit later. But as for where I share my work, I share it on Instagram at knivesmeow if you want to follow me. My website, it's also where you can find my shop. So I also run a small business where I sell my artwork in the form of, like, prints, zines, stationery, totes. And I share my studio practice in the form of vlogs on YouTube.
Wow.
And
we gotta step it up.
Just cash. Yeah, just casual. Especially if you walk into their studio and their apartment. Literally, I don't know how Radia did this, but, like, it's like a Pinterest board, but, like, 100 times better. Like, all of their small business stuff is just, like, right next to each other. Everything's, like, pink themed. It's also organized, and it makes me feel like, damn, I gotta step it up.
Yeah, we got a lot of work to do. I have a question for you. What was art school like in the pandemic? Especially as, like, a digital artist, like, if all your work was already, I'm assuming, on, like, your iPad, was it any different? Did it, like, how did it affect, like, your artistic journey?
Thankfully, I spent, I think it was, like, the last 2 or 3 months went online. It wasn't too bad. I feel like that actually accelerated me making more digital artwork. I did have a studio space at school, which sucked because suddenly all of my materials, all of my things were just abandoned there until, like, the summer of when I got to pick everything up and clear out my studio. And just being in that environment, and mainly, you know, the thing about art school is being able to have access to facilities that you may not have access to normally, like a printmaking studio, a ceramic studio. And being a student there, I did have access to these facilities. So suddenly not having that was daunting. Also, mm-hmm. just paying all of this money and suddenly not being able to be in a educational environment, in an environment where we're all being able to do critiques together or learning something together was hard. But I think it wasn't as excruciating as people who fully entered school.
Yeah, me.
In pandemic times, because that, you know, I think especially with studio time, that is really tough because mm-hmm. now you are not in the space where you usually would be. I was also at home, so suddenly everyone was at home. It was very hard to be creative mm-hmm. because I was living with my parents at the time, and I felt like, honestly, kind of suffocated and just in general, like, not in the best mood because of just, like, how uncertain things were. And also the fact that I was exiting a point where I'm like, my career should be starting soon and not knowing what things would turn out to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember you told me that you celebrated your graduation, like, 2 years after, right? Didn't you take pictures or something? Like,
that's crazy.
A while after. Yeah, same thing for me.
We didn't have a proper ceremony until, like, 2022.
Damn. It's wild where you have to, like, pay so much money, especially when the pandemic starts. You don't know what's happening. And, like, I remember I went into grad school right when the pandemic started, and I had to do, like, you know, grad school and student teaching, like, online. And it was just such a weird feeling. How was it like to get into this art school? Because I feel like a lot of kids after high school, they kind of stop and they're like, all right, now I have to really take things serious because that's what my parents told me to do.
And I think to add on to that, like, I would want you to speak a little bit on just, like, art school in general in comparison to, like, maybe what I've done, which is just, like, kind of do it in my own time and, like, see where I can take it, like, by myself.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like, you know, most of us are, what is the word? We stray away from art, just, like, most South Asian people, because we're not typically driven towards creative careers, which sucks because so much of our culture is rich with art and different crafts.
That's true.
And we've lost a lot of art forms due to negligence or lack of preservation of artifacts mm-hmm. because of, like, war and colonization, which is, like, it's like, how do we come from these rich roots of art, music, poetry, and yet we don't want our children to pursue these things, you know? It's like, I think we have enough doctors and engineers in the world. If you want to do that, if you genuinely want to do that, that's totally fine. Mm-hmm. But also, it's just like, why are we stopping people from... I mean, there's a lot of whys, but it's just... it's pretty sad how quickly people misjudge creative careers, like, as if that's not something that's possible, despite living in a world full of art, but not living in a world filled with mainly South Asian artists, you know? So I've always been making things as a child. Art class was my favorite time of day in school, despite, you know, not being raised in a financially stable household. So I had very little resources when it came to making art. Mm-hmm. I also realized I problem solved creatively. I figured out ways to turn nothing into something because of those limited resources. And the things that led me to pursue art is because, like, thankfully, my middle school had an arts program, so I was able to learn the fundamental aspects of drawing, painting, and sculpting. You know, if your school, I went to public school, if your school doesn't have those facilities, chances are you're not going to feel encouraged to want to explore and want to just do things for fun in a creative way. I also live in one of the five boroughs of New York City, and you have the option to apply to a high school of your choice, which I didn't realize is, like, just a thing that's very specific to here. So because we had an option to apply to a high school of our choice, this was a pivoting point for a lot of us in terms of where it would lead in our career path. Mm-hmm. Most of my South Asian peers were applying to these prestigious high schools that prioritize STEM-based learning. And meanwhile, I was like, I want to be an artist.
Oh,
and
there
my parents
you are.
Were like, girly, really think about this right now.
Because I think a lot of people, especially at that age, think it's like a phase and, you know, you're not going to stick with it.
Oh, yeah. No, literally, like, every time I think about the shattered, like, just hope that I was, like, clinging on to, like, 12, 13-year-old me, like, the amount of people that didn't believe in me and just where I am now, I'm like,
yeah,
oh, boy. Like, I don't know what willpower I had to push through.
Same. You use it as fuel.
Yep. What do you think it was? What do you think got you through all the naysayers?
There's a word in Japanese. Man, let me see if I can look it up. Oh my god.
Of course.
I don't know if I can look it up, but there's a word in Japanese. It's like, you know how there are special words in different languages and it's the one word, but it can mean a whole sentence?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This word is more of like determination, but determination to prove something impossible. So I feel like that's whatever this feeling was, like I was determined to show people that like, no, I can actually do this. Like, this isn't some silly little thing. Like, I am putting my entire heart,
but that's flesh, hard at blood, that tears, age,
sweat into this. It is. It really is. And, you know, a lot of us are taught to like overachieve, which is wild because my parents never even expected, like they expected me to pass class and, you know, get like above 85, 90. But I was like, I don't know what it is. Maybe I saw like other brown peers of mine who had parents that gave them that pressure. So I like simulated that pressure for myself. But yet I was like, still like, no, I want to make art. Like, I'm doing well in school, but I still want to make art. Like, I don't, or maybe I did that as a way to like still prove to people like I am a smart human being, which really sucks because as a child, you should just be fine with who you are and just developing. You're still developing, right, as a human, you know? Right. And it was just like a wild mix of different things, and especially not having people believe in you at a young age can be really detrimental in terms of like self-esteem and like how motivated you feel to pursue the things that you genuinely enjoy.
I think it's the same thing where you feel like you have to prove something to your parents and like everyone around you who didn't believe in you, and also you have to prove something to yourself. So you work. That's why so many South Asian kids like work into burnout, because they're like going so hard and they're trying to prove something to themselves and their parents, where it's like nothing is good enough and they just keep going and going, you know?
So I went to Fiorella LaGuardia, which is a performing arts high school here in Manhattan. And it's also known as the Fame School. It's where like Nicki Minaj, Jennifer Aniston, Timothée Chalamet went to. Wow. However,
I didn't know that.
I was a visual arts major. So this was like the loser major.
Nicki.
It was the loser major.
You saw Nicki in the hallway.
You never saw the queen?
No. I did see Timothée Chalamet in the hallway. He was a grade above me. But he did not look anything. He did not look anything like he does now. Like, he looked like a generic white boy.
A gerbil.
And now he looks like that horse from that Barbie movie, Princess
and the Pauper. Not the horse!
Nice jawline. Good actor.
That chiseled jawline. Handsome Squidward. Yeah. Okay, anyways, enough about a white man. On the topic of being a brown artist.
There we go. So I like that. That's a good transition.
On the topic of being a brown artist, you know, this is not a traditional, in quotes, career for many of us, but I think that is changing. We will not feel comfortable or feel like there is room for us in an industry if we don't see active positive representation. And I think we're finally seeing South Asian creative folks sprinkled throughout media, which is really lovely.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I'll talk about my roots and how being South Asian has had an effect on my life as an artist. So yeah. I was an alternative girly.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, you had the colored hair from a young age.
Yeah. And I'm really glad that my parents gave me the room to express myself. You know, there were a few boundaries, but I was a little emo scene kid when I was 13 with a head full of like electric purple hair.
Band. Who's your favorite band?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my favorite band. Oh, Black Veil Brides.
That's a good one. I'm familiar.
Paramore. I'm familiar. I had like a top five, but Black Veil Brides was like up there for me.
Did you have like the Tumblr bangs?
You mean like the side sweat bangs where my neck would hurt every time? Yeah. I would. Yeah.
I did.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Nice. I did.
I trimmed my hair with a razor.
Oh, wow.
Wow. That's different. Yeah. I was a big Sleeping with Sirens guy.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
I was a big Mayday Parade. Oh, he's singing.
Okay, these are. These are.
Oh. Yeah, I was a big. I went to Warped Tour like 3 times.
You know, I never went to Warped Tour, and then Warped Tour doesn't exist anymore.
Canceled.
Oh, really?
Crowd surfing.
No way.
Yeah, Warped Tour is done.
Damn.
Who has
so sad.
More alternative girly points than I do?
Yeah,
I
mean, yo, I used to literally crowd surf.
I'm jealous of you. I'm jealous that you
No, as you should be. I remember the first time I crowd surfed, they dropped me and I fell on my head and I was like, all right, round two.
You said concussion part two?
Yeah.
So, you know, because I was an alternative girly, you can imagine appearance-wise the amount of shit I got and my parents would get, like, a bunch of unnecessary comments that would be solely based off of appearance. Like, right. people, like, I'm not even kidding. Like, no shame. They would be like, oh my God, your daughter is punk?
Yeah. Ew.
Exclamation yeah. point, exclamation point. Like, and I'm like, what? Anyways, it was weird because, like, I had dyed hair. I had piercings. My dad actually did my ear piercings because he's a jeweler.
Oh, my God.
And I had my band shirt, casual. Yeah, my dad was, like, my dad's pretty cool dad. I had my band shirts, studded belt, Converse with the double sure. neon laces.
Mm.
And then people, you know, my other peers would be like, how did your parents let you do this but not wear shorts? Like, they let me get away with having purple hair, but God forbid my knees see the light of day.
Mm.
Moving on, in addition to strangers or my own relatives, I got a lot of backlash and judgment from my brown friends in middle school, and a lot of their moms wouldn't let me hang out with them because of how I looked or my dedication to art. So they're like, well, if she's not focused on, like, math and science, then, like, why are you hanging out with her? And this is where a lot of my trust disintegrated for other brown people because of their lack of support or projection and jealousy. So they would, like, passive aggressively ask, like, oh, how do you let your parents let you do X, Y, and Z, and then be upset at me because their own parents wouldn't comply and it would, like, ruin the nature of our friendship. And I feel like this connection with my community was further disrupted in high school because LaGuardia is a prominently white high school, and there were not a lot of South Asian people there, like, at all. Like, I feel like there was maybe, out of the whole school, like, less than 5-3%.
Wow.
But
wow.
they weren't Bangladeshi. They were, like, Indian.
Right.
And, yeah. So, very, very, felt very, like, alienated. Mm-hmm. I felt separated from embracing my culture because all I wanted to do was fit in. And not only was I not fitting in because I was brown, I was alternative and brown and constantly reminded of how difficult it is to even afford being an aspiring artist because the school was also in the Upper West Side, which is a very wealthy neighborhood.
It's so interesting how we literally live in New York. Like, you grew up in New York City and it's such a, like, it's a, you know, diverse city. It's a melting pot with so many different cultures. We also have so many Bangladeshi people here. But still, certain areas, unfortunately, are still so segregated based on, you know, income level, but also based mm-hmm. on, like, brown parents not wanting their kids to be in an artistic school and, you know, things like that, which is wild that you didn't have people that you can, like, resonate with in your classes, you know?
Yeah. Do you feel like, you know, you were saying that you felt really alienated from all of the people around you and, you know, just your own community? Do you ever feel like
this isn't just a game? It's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100 year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high flying dunks, 100 years of show stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
You grew any, like, actual resentment for being Bengali? Like, did you ever feel did you ever go through a period where, like, you felt embarrassed to say you were Bengali, or you, like, avoided certain people because you know that they were going to say something, or you just tried to, like, stray away from the Bengali community in general?
I think there was shame in not being anything other than just, like, American and just, like, identify with being American. Like, the Bangladeshi part didn't really roll in until, like, I want to say, like, later years of high school. And whenever I would bring up, like, you know, where my family's from and, like, my roots and stuff, people would be like, oh, like, where is that? Like, India? And I'd be like, similar. And now, whenever I hear that, I'm like, no, beach, this is a totally different country. Like, please, right. You know, people just have a very weird association or absolutely no knowledge.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's very important to inform people of the correct knowledge. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I feel like there was an ounce of resentment when I was really young. And it was more so I was absorbing, like, kind of like weakest link behavior from my cousins who would ridicule or, like, make like mocking accents. And I'm like, why are we doing this? It be your own, you know, like, mm-hmm. I'm like, this is embarrassing, you know? And we were kids. So it's like, we didn't really know any better. So I would just, like, be quiet and, like, listen to this, like, banter. But thinking of it now, I'm like, wow, like, we really just, there's this echo chamber of putting ourselves down, putting our community down, and feeling like we're only reduced to humor, but never excellence, you know?
So it was like later into high school, like early college is when you start to be, you know, more proud and more representative of the fact of like your background and stuff.
And, you know, like I realized so many of my friend groups in high school, like because I was one of the very few brown people there, I realized I was the token brown friend and like the only drop of melanin, which is like a red flag. College was also a very strange place. I went to a PWI, so, you know, there is a lot of classism when it comes to pursuing art in a career, but thankfully I got to develop my artistic voice in a lot of the classes that were taught by fellow POC professors. I also chose illustration because of how versatile this area is. Illustration itself is storytelling in the form of images. And in my time at college, I worked on editorial illustration, surface design, printmaking, children's books, comics, etc.
Just casual.
What was what was the conversation with your parents like when you started off art school? Because that's a big step compared to high school.
So I do not come from generational wealth. So their main thing was like, how are we going to afford this? And it was also like, are you going to be able to make money? And I did not have any answers to that, really. I needed the environment, I needed the materials, I needed the skills, and I needed the space. That's what I knew I needed. And brown parents, you can't really just tell them those things. They, for some reason, they need tangible evidence of like achievement. And it's hard because I am not going to see the fruits of my labor until I'm done with certain projects, or once I step my foot into art school and have a portfolio or get into shows or have awards. And it's really hard because it's a lot to ask for someone to believe in something that you can't show them right away. And I just hope that they believe in me enough for them to be happy with my decisions. But I think their standpoint was more so just out of like financial security.
It always is.
You know?
I mean, the fact that they took a leap of faith on you and still like let you do all that, even though it's expensive and not as secure as other jobs, is incredible and rare too.
Like, quite literally, I couldn't afford to fail. Like, if you're asking me what motivated me, I was like, I literally cannot afford to fail. And it sucks because art is the space where you should be able to experiment and like be like, well, this doesn't work, so I'm gonna try something different.
I mean, in your early 20s and your high school years is the time to fail too, but sometimes when you are like a child of immigrants, it's hard to, you know, fail because, you know, your parents see you in a negative light, or it feels like you're wasting money and you should be using that time and money to like help them and like all these different things. So I feel like it's a lot harder for us to, you know, make mistakes.
But I think like fast forward from that, you know, you went to art school, you graduated. I want to hear a little bit about your first couple months after graduating, your first couple projects, how you've kind of gotten to where you are now with growing a following, you know, being on YouTube, being on all these different things. And I think you're very successful. I think you're doing very, very well for yourself. I would like to hear what you think, how you feel like you're doing for yourself, and you know, kind of where you are now.
So a lot of the work that I do now, I really didn't think I would be doing. Some of it was accidental, some of them I don't even know if it's luck, if it's fate, whatever it is, but just the combination of being in a pandemic, things slowing down, me literally getting laid off from the part-time job I was working just accelerated the fact that I needed to have stability like sometime soon and be making money and be working in the industry. And so pandemic happened, I got laid off from my part-time job, I went into full-blown panic, and so I started selling some of my prints, like all the prints that I made in my printmaking class, and that was going to be my side hustle, as I emailed brands and like editorial people for jobs and like sending my portfolio. That's usually the rundown. That's like the very like art school pipeline of you graduate, you send out a bunch of emails, you work from home. And so I was also documenting a lot of the things that I was making in this time, because I remember my dad would film a lot, and I was like, I want to do that, but better, you know? Mm-hmm. And I didn't know where it was going to go. I filmed a little bit of my sketchbook tour. I really love to work in my sketchbook, and I started editing and uploading these videos onto YouTube, and that gained traction. Once I opened my shop, that also gained traction, and I had a lot of people asking for more. And so that more became what things are like right now. So I would say that was accidental, but like a happy accident, because I genuinely do enjoy sharing bits of my life. They're like little video, like artistic diaries of like little documentaries of my life, if you will, that I get to look back on and just kind of look at my progress. Yeah. I also started doing a bit of client work. So 2 months after graduating, I landed my first client project, which was a brand collaboration with the headphone brand Skullcandy, which was really cool. Yeah. Casual. Yeah. And that was also accidental because I actually rejected a job from the person that I was working with because they were seeking a junior agent. And I was like, well, I don't want to be on the business end. I want to be on the art making end. And I, you know, respectfully declined. My parents were super upset. They were like, how could you turn down a salary? And I'm like, I graduated from art school to make art. And that's what I want to do. And he circled back with me and was like, I have a project for you. Do you want to take it? And I was like, yeah. And so I feel like that definitely became the first step of like gaining that clientele. I've also worked with BuzzFeed and Adult Swim.
Oh, yeah. I'm also Humbleflex.
Currently working on another client project, which is a secret. But I actually don't do a lot of client work because of how self-sufficient I've set up my streams of income around marketing my work. You know, I think that's a huge privilege. But that project will be releasing in March, so keep your eyes peeled.
Casual.
No hint. You know, no hint. No hate for the difficulties?
Let's say it's animated. It's mildly animated. That's as much as I can tell you. And it's a brand that I have worked, I've done stuff for before, but this time they're like, they reached out to me and was like,
snap,
you want to work together? And I was Radio. Like, yeah.
There we go.
Last year, I also did my very first workshop at Northwestern University. So they flew me into Chicago so I could do like, I could teach a little sketchbook workshop. I also started selling my products wholesale, so you can find my wares IRL. Like,
You heard it here first.
You got me in Orlando. We got some stories.
Maybe.
Reach out. Oh, she doesn't even know at this point. She's international.
No, I could. Sometimes I send out cold emails being like, "Hi, do you want art in your store?" And they're like, "Yeah," and I'm like, "Wow, fantastic." I think another big win is also when I moved out. You know,
big win for Broncos.
If you haven't listened to the moving out episodes on Difficult-ish, do that, okay?
Yeah.
So, I grew up in a 2-bedroom apartment in New York City. I've never known what it's like to live in like a you know, picturesque house. So it was getting cramped, and I just needed my own space. And you know, all of the relatives who doubted me, they were shook, because when I moved out, they're like, where is she gonna go with this art degree? And I said, places. One of the sweetest interactions that I've had, a positive one, is when I met like this random, you know, when you're just outside and like they're like, oh, hello, and you're like, who is this? Anyways, it was some random family friend, I don't know. And my parents, they were like, oh yeah, you know, like my daughter is an artist, she's going to art school. And this auntie was like, wow, like my children aren't even that skilled to even try their hand at the arts. And it was, she spoke with like, there was no ill intention. And like, I could tell she was like, oh, wow, like this person is talented, you know? And it made my heart full that day. And I still remember that moment. Be like that auntie, because encouragement is literally free, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so
and
rare.
It goes a long way when you don't get a lot. Like the smallest amount you'll remember, you'll remember so you'll be telling it on a podcast years later.
Yeah, I hope that auntie has like a really nice long life.
Yeah,
there we go.
And I also feel like the first time I heard my parents tell me that they were proud of me is after I started making the big dollars.
Yes.
They're like, oh wow, you're a human now. We see you as a different entity.
Do they? They're kind of in like. I mean, it sounded like they were in support, you know, throughout your life, but now they're like on board with it. Like they kind of like trust you.
It's rare to have Bangladeshi parents that are like supportive of the art degree and also like colored hair and a different, like a traditional life than other people. Because I've seen that with Indian parents. with some that I've seen, but I haven't really seen it with Bangladeshi. I feel like Bangladeshi parents care a lot more about religion mixed in with culture and also like reputation slash image.
And now she's making the $1 million brand deals, and she's
I think that's a stretch, but she's
incorporating difficult dish in all of her art designs. She's drawing me and Mahua on
with everything. The cat with a cat on her shoulder
with the cat in the middle on Mo. I'm allergic, so not on me. They could be on Mo,
right?
And then on top it just says,
and then on top of my head is just Radia's.
I can have a thumbs up. I'll have a thumbs up and like a coffee. I have a coffee. She has the cat.
Right. I'm just holding the cat, gripping it.
So I think transitioning away from art, all the art stuff, I know there's a lot more to you and a lot more that you're interested in apart from cats.
Who likes cats and is beyond that, not just an artist.
I would love to hear a little bit about some of the other topics that you are passionate on, you have a voice on, things that mean a lot to you. And, you know, because I know that a lot of people listening would love to hear perspectives from people like you on topics like stuff that you're passionate on. So, yeah.
So, you know, these are some things that I care about and it ties into my work. You know, we love a sustainable baddie. I always see Mohua with her thrifted fits. So I'm glad we're pushing sustainability like in a way where it's like we got to have it accessible to the people. Mm-hmm. I also, you know, fight for gender equality. That's why I'm very big on intersectionality, because I mentioned I'm queer and I feel like there are definitely different things that affect queer POC versus like queer people who are white.
Right.
And so always. I don't know if you want to, you know, I feel like maybe I am the first queer South Asian person that's on this podcast.
You are. It's interesting because like in grad school and in undergrad, I learned a lot about, you know, intersectionality, they, them pronouns, pronouns in general, just like things like this that we don't really learn in high school and school and media in general. So, you know, I've only really read like text. I've only really studied it by watching videos of other people or, you know, just school-based type of learning. But I'm really excited to hear about it from your perspective and from someone that actually lived through this experience. And I feel like this is something so important because even though this story is going to be personal and unique to just you, I feel like it can, first of all, not only just help me and Mashun learn more about, you know, topics that are revolving in society and South Asian society and also are very taboo in general. But I feel like it can also help other people speak about it if they are also going through something similar and also maybe put the words to it. And I know we have older people listening to this, like we have, you know, moms and dads listening to this. So I feel like it would really bridge a gap and form some understanding with so many different generations, you know, with our younger generation who don't really know how to, we kind of like tiptoe around it because we don't know how to approach it, and the older generation who doesn't know how to accept it or, you know, talk about it. So I'm really excited.
Disclaimer, I cannot speak on behalf of the entire South Asian community, right, like the queer South Asian community, but I did go to an event last year called Queer Reflections, and it was an intergenerational Bangladeshi queer event.
It looked amazing.
And I met queer people who are like my dad's age. I was like, whoa, like where were y'all when they say in the closet? They really mean it. It's because it's like we are not allowed to just like be out, be expressive, you know, just like be ourselves. And it's just so hard, like so many of those stories. It was organized by my friend actually, and I just thought it was so beautiful. And there were even like a lot of other aunties who were like straight and like uncles were straight who were just so respective of holding that space. And I feel like we really need more of that because, you know, there's a lot of internalized homophobia in a lot of communities. And, you know, we can only talk about our own communities here. And so just experiencing that. So this is just my personal experience. This is, I don't have things figured out. I don't think a lot of people have things figured out, but, you know, life is a journey and things change. You experience things,
right?
However, I knew I was fruity whenever people would ask me which guy I liked in class, and I was like, nah, I'm good.
None of them, sorry.
And at a certain point, it started getting so lame that I would just, like, randomly pick a boy, and then I was, like, forever associated with having a crush on them. Like, it was just a ploy. So, you know. I also don't know if I believe in the concept of coming out. I think it's a very Western concept, and you don't need to, like, come out in order to live your truth, because you already are once you accept who you are. Like, if you accept who you are, then, like, that's you. And there will be a lot of people who aren't going to accept you regardless of sexuality. Like, there are people, you could be, like, a chill person, and there are people who will misjudge you and everything, you know? Yeah. And as I mentioned, you know, the internalized homophobia in the brown community, and, like, a lot of this can stem from religious beliefs or societal norms, etc. I'm not going to get too deep into those, because people get mixy in that area.
Yeah, that's you know, hard to navigate, especially talk about.
I also think, as a person of color, we don't exactly have the space to talk about these things within our community, and especially within our family. And for a lot of us, if you're still living with your parents or depend on them financially, this can, you know, threaten your safety and your connections with them. It can even, you know, affect your job. I mean, you know, we're not here in the U.S. in particular. I mean, I guess it's changing in some states, too. There's books that are banned. Mm-hmm. Not only about being queer, but just being in, having a drop of melanin, you know?
Yeah. Wait, before we continue, can you, because I, like, completely forgot to bring this up, can you define what intersectional means and what queer means for, like, the people that aren't sure about a big word or two big words like that?
I mean, by definition, queer means strange or odd, or what I'm referring to is denoting, this is the Google,
imagine Radia's definition, everyone cancels her.
No, it just comes out of my brain.
Odd.
Denoting or relating to a sexual or gender identity that does not correspond to established ideas of sexuality and gender, especially heterosexual norms, you know? So if you identify with anything other than, like, because sexual orientation or sexual, just, like, I feel like I'm saying that word so often. Sorry. Gender identity and sexual identity are two different things, and I feel like people can get really confused. And
yeah, break that down. What's the difference? Because I struggle with, you know, understanding what the difference could be.
Okay, we're gonna pull out that queer vocab 101. So you know, there's, you know, the cishet. Most things are, like, the cishet standard of society, cisgender meaning, like, people who whose gender identity corresponds to the sex registered for them at birth. So it's just really annoying, because a lot of queer people get reduced to, like, just, like, body parts. They're like, oh, well, you're not a girl, like, you're not really a woman, to, like, maybe someone who is a trans woman, you know? And it's like, and it kind of just really boils down to just being respectful of people. It's just like, you don't go up to anyone just be like, what's between your legs, or like, what's you know, it's just so, it's so rude. And it's like, it's very easy to just apologize and correct yourself, and there are ways. It's like, it's not your business, you know? And if someone feels comfortable with bringing that to you, they will, you know? Or also, like, heterosexual. It's just, like, a person who is sexually or romantically attracted exclusively to people of the other sex. And that is most of society, like, cis, hetero people. And so queer people, I feel like queer is a perfect word for me in particular. I feel like I struggled. I was like, do I just like women? Do I like both men and women? And I was like, but wait, what about trans and non-binary people? And I feel like just queer was just a label that I feel like I felt very comfortable with. It also used to be used in a derogatory way, but I feel like people have reclaimed this word in a way where it's, I feel like more people of color, queers of color, really identify with this umbrella term of being queer.
Yeah, I feel like it's a word that doesn't really label and, like, nitpick exactly who you are and what you like immediately. It kind of, it again, it's like a umbrella term that makes you feel more secure and allows you to, like, explore options without, you know, feeling like you're not one, or you're too much of this, or, you know, you just because you didn't date a woman, you can't, you know, you can't be queer, or you can't be bi, or you can't be gay. So it's just like so many, you know, I feel like it's a really good embodying term.
Is you labeling yourself as queer in regards to who you're attracted to, or what you identify yourself as, if that makes sense? Like, is it in correlation with who you're attracted to, like in the same realm of like, I'm bi or I'm gay? Or is it just like you identify as? Is my question making sense?
I think it is, but also just how broad the word queer can cover is okay. Like, it's like, I'm queer, but if we're going to get into very specifics of my personal knowledge, I would say that I'm pansexual. You know, there's a lot of people who are bisexual, and there's a whole array of like people who identify with different sexual orientations. There's also like, for example, I use she, they pronouns, and it's like, oh, what is this? Like pronouns, like, and we can get into that. And so, you know, I've lived my life as a brown woman. I've can only explain my experiences as a brown woman, but there are some days when I wake up and I'm like, ah, I love being a woman. And there are other days when I'm like, I wish we could deal with not having to deal with gender and just, you know,
I feel like equality. It's also such a privilege to not even think about, like, this is what we learned in grad school, where like, if you don't have to think about your pronouns, if you don't even have to put on your profile or tell people that you go by she, her, or like, or he, him, but other people, especially like trans people or people that do go by these pronouns and they have to, you know, put it onto this like billboard, basically, it makes them feel singled out and makes them feel stupid. That's why there are so many people that like ridicule them, because they're like, oh, this is so obvious. Like, why do they have to write he, him? But they're, you know, they might be trans, or like, why do they have to write he, they? And that's why it should be normalized that people put pronouns on their bio, just, you know, again, as like a respect thing. And so it makes it easier for people that are, you know, like marginalized, you know. And like, I wanted to bring up the word intersectional again, because I feel like it is a word that is not really used too much. I think it's more popularized now, but I think intersectional, from like from what I understand, is when a person has like identities, more than one identity to them. So for example, like for me, I'm one identity is I'm a woman. Another one that might make me marginalized is that I'm a person of color or a South Asian woman. And then for Radia, another thing that makes up her intersectional identity is that she's queer, right? So it's like all of the different identities that you have that makes you more than, you know, what a person might see, you know,
which really sucks, because when we think about intersectionality, it's like, what makes you once more removed from the cis white man, which is what holds the most privilege in this world, you know, let's be real. And so it's just like double homicide, you know, like it's just like, she's brown, she's queer, she's an artist. Right. Yeah. And, you know, just like going back to a little bit of story time, you know,
we love story times.
You know, most of us brown women, we're not allowed to date boys. Did I do it anyways? Yeah. My parents weren't happy about that. They do know. I was like, yeah, so I've dated this person, that person. They were like, okay. They were not happy. But I was like, you know what? Here you go.
The fact that they knew is a big deal.
Yeah. Here's the truth. Yeah. No, at a certain point, I just, you know how it's like, you either get really good at lying. I did the opposite, where I'm like, I'm tired. Here's just this information.
She got really good at telling the truth.
Yeah. I got really good at telling the truth. Maybe that's why I have a better relationship with my family now. Yeah. And so telling them that I was queer was like at the bottom of my priority list, because there were so many issues that I had to tackle first. Like I mentioned throughout this podcast, just like growing up, not financially stable, like being a brown person navigating the art space. And so being queer, like, didn't get the light of day. But meanwhile, this was something that I noticed like while I was like developing all of these things. However, like, I didn't get to have the space to explore my queerness until I had a safe environment to do so, which was after moving out and like making friends who were kind and respectful towards me. And like, the, you know, I even had, like, in middle school, there was a guy that I rejected who outed me on Facebook, and I think I was like 13, and it was just so messed up, you know, like, it's like, why literally. And from like the whole not allowed to date boys thing also made me so scared of even approaching girls from like a romantic angle. And I have social anxiety. I have trauma and I still have those things. But looking back on my past relationships as a teenager, I'm like, oh boy, I was not ready. And so, you know, like, we have the societal pressure of like not being able to date because it'll make us look bad. And then it's like, you know, once you have multiple college degrees, make sure you get married and give us some kids. And so in my tiny teenager brain, I was like, wait, like, this messes up the trajectory of like what my parents expect. Like, I was like, well, what if I end up having a wife? You know, this is a thing that I was thinking about. I was like, you know, it's like, so most people don't have to think about these things until you face this issue. Like, yeah. You know, it's like, it's that hint of fruity that just mm-hmm. like comes out of nowhere.
Did you confirm it, or like, did people just assume that you were queer?
I didn't start bringing it up until more recently. Mm. I think back then I was just like, try to fit in, try to fit in.
Okay.
Like, there's no reason for me to make myself othered right now when I am already being othered by so many other things. Mm-hmm. And I was also still figuring out a lot of other things. So, right. And also I wasn't as communicative. And so there was just a, like my journal had it just the thick journal. I was like, yo, there's so much going on right now.
It gets filled in a day.
Yep, pretty much. And so, you know, there was just a lot of just like panic, bi panic, pansexual panic, what mm-hmm. have you. And it's a lot because it's just like balancing school, balancing, you know, friends, all this stuff. And then again, the bottom of my priority list was like queerness. It was like this like thing that was staring behind me, and I know it's there, and one day I would have to face it. And a lot of people, because we grew up with that internalized homophobia, we either reject it or we accept it, you know, the moment we have any kind of inkling like that. And like, for me, I was like, it was the thing of like, I could continue to lie, or I can just be like, all right, I'm gonna be honest. I'm gonna be for real, be very real with me right now, and mm-hmm. just face it. And mm-hmm. so for a lot of people, it's just like, it's a thing. And I'm like, okay. And it's really like up, it's about you. Like, no one can place a label on you. Like, it's a thing where it's you operate and you come to terms with the fact that like, is this part of who you are? I feel like we didn't discuss intersectionality.
Oh, yeah, true.
Like, just, like, oh, wait, no, we did.
I mean, like, I talked about, the definition, yeah.
The reason that we need intersectionality when it comes to, you know, informing other people, informing members of our own community, it's like, we can't just tackle this, like, overarching social issue or whatever. Like, we need to break it down and, like, work within our community if we actually want to see change in our community. And, like, for me, it's just, like, focusing on the queer South Asian community. And I feel like I didn't even know all of these people existed until last year, when I was going to more queer South Asian events and feeling like I felt so much more safe and accepted into the space. Because, you know, it's like, if I go to just a South Asian event, it's like I could be faced with homophobia, or even briefly mentioning that I'm queer, or like having pronouns ridiculed. Like, yeah. There's just little things where I'm like, all right, do I face this? Or do I, you know, if I go into a white queer space, dealing with racism, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, what have you. And so it's really difficult. And that's where we need intersectionalism for like everything, because mm-hmm. that's how you actually get to the core of things that you want to change and living in the world that you hope to see and hope to improve, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why it's so important, even like a small thing. It's not even related to queerness, but like when an event is just South Asian, that's different from having an event that's Bangladeshi, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, we didn't grow up with South Asian representation, and it is great when we do have South Asian representation and there's events for that. But also, you know, Bangladeshis haven't had that spotlight either, and you have a more of a connection with people that you're actually with people that you're you can actually resonate with, you know? So, mm-hmm. you know, that's like a whole different thing from what you're talking about, but I feel like it's from the same vein, you know?
And I think people have a really, not all people, but like, you know, some people have a difficulty with, you know, preferred names or preferred pronouns, like emphasis on the word preferred. Mm-hmm. And it's like, do you really think the entire world is supposed to function in this narrow version of what you believe is the correct way to operate? Like, no. Mm-hmm.
I'd love to hear about the pronouns, like, you know, what machine
like knows. I can't convince anyone to change their behavior, but this all boils down to whether or not you have respect for someone else, and that's really it. And like, again, gender identity has nothing to do with appearance. You don't mm-hmm. have to like pass a certain way to have a gender identity, you know? And unfortunately, the way this world operates societally, it's just this expectation of like, if you have long hair, then therefore you are a girl.
Yeah.
If you have boobs, then therefore you are a woman, you know? And it's very dehumanizing, and it's like, I don't know, it's very objectifying too. And I would say that she, they gives me the ability to remain flexible with just my gender expression. I feel like the core of it all started when my mom started dressing me as a boy. Like, my mom put me in little boys' clothes when I was younger. And she was setting me up for the future, honestly. And I realized there was this phase of me like being like, I hate pink, I hate girly things, blah blah blah, and then me being full like bimbo, but also full like pink. Kind of masculine and like embracing the strength in like just like South Asian women's bodies. Like, have you seen our body type? Like, we got that, like, you know, I don't know how to explain it, but mm-hmm. I think I realized I don't have to box myself into like this one narrow thing. And when I was like, okay, people can use she, her pronouns or they, them pronouns. I feel like personally for me, they, them is a little bit more affirming. And I really like, I feel good on the inside whenever people do use the they, them pronouns, but mm-hmm. I'm okay with both. And some people put them in order of like preference. So they'll put like she, they, or they, she, but like for me, mm-hmm. it's like, if you know, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, there could be people who are like, I don't care. Like, I'm not going to use this. You look like a girl and therefore you're she, her. Okay, fine. You can be disrespectful, but I'm not going to continue to engage with you. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really that simple. Like, you can choose to be respectful towards another human or just continue being an asshole.
I think something that I heard a lot growing up, which is like halted my progression in learning more about everything that we've talked about in the last 20 minutes, because honestly, like, I feel like I'll always be kind of a little bit lost because I feel like I was just like a little bit late to learning. But something I heard a lot growing up is just that, like, all of this is made up, like, quote unquote made up. Like, it's just like new modern progressive people.
Yeah, like people are trying to be woke.
Trying to change what is like quote unquote normal. And that's like what I've just always heard my whole life. And I actually like, unfortunately, like, I'm not happy to say it, but like, I've had a couple instances where I've been disrespectful, like when I was younger, to someone who's transgender or someone who went by they, them, not out of me like purposely trying to disrespect another human. I would never want to do that, but it, like, I know that like I've said things and I've like egged things on because I just like didn't take it serious. And I think that's like a lot of people's where a lot of people kind of find issues is like they don't take it serious. They don't see it as serious.
The whole like, oh, this is not normal comes from a, you know, hetero cis hetero societal perspective, because if your world looks like that, you're going to expect the rest of the world to look like that too. And so when you're faced with any kind of differences, you're gonna be like, well, something's out of place, so this doesn't seem right. And I felt like that too until I was like, wait a minute, I'm the difference. And, you know,
it adds on to us talking about like being an ally. I think that's my main question is like, not only how to like be supportive, but like, like, how can I understand this better apart from maybe just like the respecting the other human? Or does it all just kind of boil down to like respect?
First of all, hate is taught. I think hate is taught. And so we're only going to reflect what is taught to us.
That's a good one.
You know, you have to be willing to understand. If you're unwilling to understand, I'm sure there are probably people who started listening to the podcast and like immediately checked out the moment that I mentioned I was queer, you know, and I wouldn't be surprised. I'm also not like, it's like, whatever, you have the choice to listen to this, whether or not you want to. And if you still are listening to this, I appreciate you, because I'm hoping that there is some willingness in you to hear people's stories, listen to, members of our own community. And maybe you are queer and listening to this, maybe you're not, maybe you're going through a crisis, whatever it is, I just hope that it speaks to people in some way.
Also to like humanize you, you know, you're more than just your queer identity. And you're an artist, you're a woman, you know, you're a daughter, an older sister, you have all these different identities to you. And I feel like a lot of people see trans people or queer people and they just assume that they're monsters or they're not human or whatever, this and that. And it just humanizes you, you know, it shows that you have experiences beyond just that identity. And again, you are intersectional.
I also feel like heterosexuality is a very like white colonist view. Like there are a lot of indigenous and like native populations, even in our own South Asian region, where like same-sex relationships were perfectly normal until like the white man decided to just like change all of that. And also if you add religion into the perspective, these are also certain things. And like for a lot of people, we go through this crisis of like these two things somehow not being able to be in the same place and having to choose one over the other, which is really hard, because it's just like, what happened to just being compassionate, kind human, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like having to like pick a side or like tell other people the way they're supposed to live their life or mm-hmm. shame other people. And it's like, it's, I gotta have to feel out the space for me to know if I feel safe to even mention that I'm queer. Mm-hmm. So it is a lot for me to even just be talking about this podcast, because I know you guys have so many listeners, and I better not hear no mixy DMs, okay? I don't want to hear on that.
Blocked.
Immediate block.
So you said it's beyond just like the respect. So what else is it to be, you know, someone that's supportive of queer people and understanding of them?
So some things you can do to be a better ally is practice using gender neutral vocabulary into your speech. It's why I say partner or significant other, you know, like if you misgender someone, just apologize, correct yourself, you know. Example, I'm so sorry, I'll make sure to use, you know, preferred pronouns, whatever their preferred pronouns is from now on.
Yeah.
Check your own internalized homophobia. That can be very important. Hate is taught. As I said, hate is taught.
Big one.
Hate is taught.
I bet you have queer friends, and the reason you may not even know is because you might be the reason creating that unwelcoming space and not know it.
Wow, that's tea. Think about that. That's tea.
Yeah. Please don't put us in a box. Because a lot of us are still figuring things out, you know? We have more room because we are seeing positive queer representation. We are finally seeing queer melanin in media now. So we're beginning, it's not even like a, oh, this wasn't normal. It's because we were literally not allowed. We were freaking, like, think of, just do some research on queer history. Like, the fact that we've been excluded from so many quote normal things because you don't see it, it's like out of sight, out of mind, but now that you do, it's like more people are taking issue with it, but also more people are starting to like identify with these things because it's been like a repressed issue for so long, you know. It's the same way with like South Asian representation.
I think that's the one, because I think a lot of people label it as like black and white or just like this or that, when it's like there's infinite space in the spectrum that you can fall. And I think that that's maybe the biggest thing that I had to recognize when it comes to understanding this, is like, you don't have to be like queer, not queer. You can still be figuring it out and like not know yet. And I think that helps a lot of people get it too.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be black and white. It's a rainbow for a reason. You know?
Wow. Wow.
That's crazy. And also, I, you know, if you were to ask me to tell you all the things that I'm saying 5 years ago, I would have had less knowledge, because again, it's like not all of us have things figured out. There are people who don't even have things figured out until they're like, I don't know, past their 30s, 40s. So like, it's not like a thing you gotta just know, you know? And it's also not something that you have to bring everywhere unless you feel comfortable bringing this wherever you go, or, you know, creating a community you feel safe around. And like, it's hard to deal with people who are not willing to understand, or quite literally people who threaten you, you know? Hello?
Surprise.
That would be my cat.
Cool. I mean, that was a lot. I think people who have listened up to this point, you have enough information to live the rest of your life on.
You should, your notebook, like whoever's taking notes listening to this, their like, notebook should be filled.
They're like running out of ink.
Queer, queer.
Yeah. But also I appreciate you so much for being so open about this, because again, I know it is very like, you know, sticky subject. You're very vulnerable, and you know, we really appreciate that you were so open about it, and you were teaching both me and Mashun and just everyone else listening too, you know.
Maybe we can close off with some key takeaways, things that, you know, we want to leave our listeners off with.
Man, some things that I've learned just from this whole conversation is just like, people who love and care about you will accept you for who you are.
Fact.
And I'm also really grateful to be in a relationship where my partner embraces and wants to learn about my queer identity.
Yeah, he does.
And also just like being South Asian. And I also recognize that I do benefit from like cishet privilege, and I feel like that would be very different. For example, if I was in a relationship with a woman, I don't even know how, you know, what kind of reactions I would get. But, you know, that's something that I feel like is important to also mention. I'm also grateful to have a circle of friends who respect me for who I am and also finally having, like, not finally, but, like, you know, having more freedom to express queerness in all aspects of my life, like art and fashion, mm-hmm. and giving myself more room, like almost extending that expression that I had from middle school and giving it, like, I don't know, like a revamp, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like Mohua has also had a very huge impact on my life
me.
As a South Asian woman. You know, she's a ray of sunshine in my life. She's restored my trust in brown people.
Wow.
I've met so many other brown people through her. You guys are blessed to have this podcast. Number one South Asian podcast, okay?
Hey, yo. Yeah,
That's what I'm saying.
You are a gem. You also restored my faith in humanity and South Asian friendships. I was like, how does a small, petite girl know so much information? She just has all this information and knowledge in that big brain of hers, but you can't really tell under those pink and bubbly clothes.
Who would have known? Let's move on to some rapid-fire questions.
Oh, wow.
I haven't thought of... But I'm going to think about them right now. What is your favorite
South Asian
book?
Food? Oh, wow.
Book and food.
Favorite book and food? Oh, my God.
Book and food or food and book? Whichever book. Order.
Oh, my God. My mom makes really good vegan biryani. She figured out how to make it so I can eat
vegan,
it.
Right?
Nothing can top. Biryani. Yes, nothing can top the vegan biryani.
That's different. Vegan. I've never heard that one.
But like Bengali breakfast food is also good.
Yes.
I love a good like alu bhaji paratha.
Yes, yeah. Paratha's elite Sunday
fun
morning.
Fun fact, Mo eats 14 paratha at a time.
You know what? That's not a fun fact.
Is that
an
issue?
Just a lie. That's just a lie.
You're posing that as if that's an issue.
No. I would have said issue if it was issue. I'm saying fun. It's fun.
What's your favorite book? What's your favorite book?
Oh my God.
It's about you.
No, don't ask me that question.
Oh, she doesn't read.
No, I do read. High school ruined my love for reading, and it's like the moment someone asks me what my favorite book is, I forget every single book I've read in my entire life.
Yeah, Headspun by Masha Manir.
But I would like to get into reading.
It's okay.
Oh yeah.
Headspun, obviously.
It's okay. I got you.
Headspun.
I got you back.
I got my own copy.
Favorite game to play.
Ooh, any Legend of Zelda game.
I love that.
That or Kingdom Hearts. Any Kingdom Hearts game or any Legend of Zelda game.
Yeah, you know I could play the Kingdom Hearts theme song. I'll play it right now.
That will get me so emotional.
Yeah, he actually can. Let him play it after.
Dearly beloved.
What is your favorite travel destination?
You know, she told me today that she hasn't. Oh. No, well, hold on. She told me today that she has never traveled outside the country.
I have not.
Really?
My passport has been collecting dust.
Why?
For the past 24 years.
Like purposely, or you just like are waiting for maybe like an opportunity?
Well, first of all, it expired, and there's just, like, this weird process of, like, going to the post office to get it renewed, because it expired when I was, like, a child, and so I've just put that off. And also, because I've never traveled internationally, I feel like that's the first step to, like, kind of just do it more consistently.
Big girl moves.
I have been falling in love with Chicago, because of how similar it is to New York, but, like, just landscaped a lot better with more space. And I would like to go, I visited there last year when I went to Northwestern, but I'd like to visit there again.
Good. The bean.
All right. So Radia, you are an avid listener. You know how we end our episodes, and you know we end with our
The 10-second advice.
10-second advice. God. So I'll let Mashun go since he's an expert with advice, and I'll let him think of something. Radia, I'll let you think of something while he's thinking because it's gonna take a couple of days, and then I'll let you guys know what my advice is.
2 to 5 business days.
My 10-second advice, invest in some blackout curtains for your bedroom. Blackout curtains are a game changer. You don't know.
Do you have them?
Duh. Because my bedroom window faces the sun because it faces the west.
Oh, yeah. I did say that those were good.
Piercing into my room between 4 to 6 o'clock. But these blackout windows, they're my best friends. I'm going to give them nicknames. Best investment.
Here ever. I am sleeping with my windows and blinds open.
You don't want nature's alarm?
Exactly.
No, I like the birds and the chirping and the crickets and grasshoppers, but not the sun. Sun can relax. Yeah. Relax. Chill out. Chill out.
He said no vitamin D.
Nope.
Not today.
Radhi, you got your 10-second advice?
Yes, I came prepared.
Mm.
Pursue the things you're passionate about and support living artists.
Wow.
So put that Van Gogh poster down. That man is long dead.
Wow.
You can still admire him, but instead, circulate that South Asian dollar.
Oh, she's speaking facts. And she got advice related to the episode too. She came prepared. See, that's what happens when you're an avid listener. You know what you're going to say before you even start.
What about you? You're stalling.
Mine is, you know, take a few workout classes that excite you. Whether it be boxing, whether it be Bollywood dancing, whether it be yoga, gymnastics. Pilates. You know, just sometimes I feel like the gym can be kind of boring. You know, sometimes we're the only thing that's pushing us to go to the gym is ourselves. And so we just say no. But when you have a class that's like exciting to go to and also you have to pay for it if you don't go, that's when it really gets to you. You know, you're like, oh, crap, I got to go.
Yeah.
Get that body moving. It's good for the soul.
Mm-hmm. Where can we find you before we end off the pod?
You can find me
on the freaking whole world, dominating the world. Yeah, literally.
You can find me on Instagram at Knives Meow. You can also find my website, RadiaRahman.com. It's where you can find my portfolio, my shop, and also a list of places where I have my work IRL. I also have a Patreon, patreon.com/RadiaRahman. It's where you can support your favorite artists.
Yeah, all this is going to be in the description.
Yes.
All of it.
I'm also going to be exhibiting at Mocha Fest this year, April 1st and 2nd. It's a really big independent comic and illustration festival in Manhattan. So please come say hi, buy my work, expose yourself to some living artists. I'm table 190 this year.
Oh, wow. A lot of tables.
Is there a reason we went with the Knives Meow instead of Radia Rahman?
Someone already took it. So whoever the imposter is, give
it up. Imposter. Show yourself. Maybe they're listening right now.
The handle came from a Scott Pilgrim comic. It's like there's a character named Knives Chow, and I liked cats, and I was like, ha ha ha, Knives Meow, sounds like Knives Chow. So I kind of just ran with it.
And then
it's kind of like
Mahua's
explanation of Labrador. Yeah, we just, it's just, you gotta stick with the OG, you know? Yeah.
Good.
All right, well, if you listen to this episode this far, like, you must really love us, you must really love Radia, you must, you know, love this podcast. So that just must mean you have to give us a 5 on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, wherever you're listening. You got to follow us on Instagram, where we're at Difficultish, on TikTok, we're at Difficultish Podcast. You just have to show us some love, you know, because you showed Radia love this whole episode, so now where's ours, you know? So follow Mashoon is at Mashoon Munir. Follow me if you would like. It's at Labyrinth Ave. And we are so happy that you listened this far. Do you have any closing words, Mashoon?
Radia, thank you so much for doing this with us.
Yes.
I've always wanted to do an episode with topics like this and to learn more. And I'm excited to continue speaking on with you. And I'm excited to hear what people say about the episode.
You can say that this topic is kind of difficult-ish.
Yeah, it is. That's where the name comes from, you know?
Wow.
After 75 episodes, we're finally living up to the name.
My
damn, 75.
Yeah.
And I listened to all of them.
But Radia, thank you so much. This was a great time. I feel like the time flew. I didn't even realize how much we recorded, but I enjoyed every second of it. And
thank you, Radia, for being such a good friend of mine and for coming on and speaking so freely, you know? I feel like it is like such a nerve-wracking topic, but you killed it, and we really appreciate your experiences.
If they made it this far, what should they comment on the Friday post? Tell us, Radia.
I don't know.
First thing you think of.
Binky.
Oh, wow.
Binky.
All right, comment Binky.
B-I-N-K-Y.
K-Y. Yes, Binky.
Love it.
Nice.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you guys next week. Allah Hafiz.
Allah Hafiz.
Lapis.
This isn't just a game, it's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.